Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway, and what we do when we gather is the same thing, only I'm in a transition. I'm going to call it evolving. I'm evolving within a species. We connect the food producer to the food consumer, and on Thursday, we do it with Amanda Radke, Mitchell, South Dakota, who claims to be sitting in the barn today. Do you even know where the barn's at?
Well, I found it. I stumbled my way out there this morning to find a brand new big calf.
You fall calving people. I don't understand that.
Well, it's one of those things where you have really good ones that you want to give a second chance to, and all of a sudden you have a bunch of them. So it's probably not the best business sense. It's a good thing we have a guest with a little more common sense than that.
Robert Koberstein, Roger, what is your address, town?
Holyoke, Colorado.
Holyoke. Oh, welcome to the program. Would you give a first calf heifer another chance?
Depending on the heifer.
Well, the answer is unanimous.
I like this guy already.
Yeah. Well, this is how this came about. Last week, Amanda and I were talking to Cole from Texas, who had a tremendous idea, has been marketing beef direct and building a new plant, had a grand opening. And in our listening area, Roger got a hold. I don't know why, Roger, you got a hold of Amanda instead of me. That makes no sense whatsoever why you would contact her instead of me. But anyway.
Hey,
what'd you say?
That's great taste, Trent.
Yeah, I know.
And the man.
Apparently, I do, too, because I ask you to come and join me every Thursday. But Roger got a hold of Amanda and said, we've been doing this for quite some time under Koberstein Farms. Welcome to the program, Roger. It took too long, but you're here now.
Yes, thank you very much for participating this morning.
Well, first off, how come y'all don't let it rain in that northeast Colorado area?
I don't know. We were really in a drought situation this year. My nephew and I talked about that last week. He had measured since the first year 4.7 inches of moisture for our area from January 1 to last week. But the good Lord was very fortunate to us last Wednesday and Thursday, and we got anywhere from 1 to 2 inches of rain.
Roger.
We are very thankful.
Make sure that when you're talking into that high-tech microphone you got, you don't let it waver. You keep it right there. You faded a couple times on me.
Okay.
Yeah, you sound great right there. But how much did you get last week?
Last Wednesday and Thursday, we got between 1.70 inches and 2 inches of nice, gentle rain. So it made the wheat sowing look much more promising.
What are you doing in the... Tell us about your beef business.
We started... I started a beef business several years ago. Got tired of taking discounts for our culls or our calves with short ears or, you know, we kind of live in a very cold climate. And so we just started feeding them out and I was selling them as quarter halves and wholes and over the several years, why it's grown and grown and grown to where now we process between 6 to 10 head every week, and we still sell quarter halves and wholes and have some beef in some restaurants in the Front Range and cater to a small group of grocery stores. It's about 7 grocery stores in Northeast Colorado and Western Kansas and Northern Colorado.
You know, I voiced this opinion last week because of our own personal experience, but you mentioned those restaurants. The restaurant trade for a small producer is just a tough one to pull off because they want the primals. They don't want a good blend and balance of everything that you have. You've obviously made that work. What's the secret?
Well, the first deal... The first set of restaurants that we started with was, okay, boys, this is the deal. You're going to take the whole critter and we're going to figure out, you know, most generally all of the critter. And we're going to figure out how to do that. And with the help of my processor, who we've had a long time relationship with, and they are actually on the front range. So between the chefs and the processor and myself, why, we got it figured out to where they could use grind, they could use primals, they could, they also took some round cuts to make roast and stuff like that. So it turned out to be a pretty beneficial deal for everybody.
So were they looking for menu ideas? Like, you know, if they were typically just would take the hamburger and the steaks, were they open to suggestions on how they could use, you know, some of the lesser known and utilized cuts?
Oh, yes. And then I also made a point to go and visit them and talk to the chefs and the staff. And then there was when they had a grand opening of one of them, why they actually featured our product. And they have a kind of started out, they had a community night where you could go to the big table and they would feature one producer's product. And that was their kind of their mainstream, was this restaurant was trying to connect to the producer. But we spent a lot of time visiting with them and talking to the waiters and answering any questions they had.
Well, the key, what you told us about making this work, is not really on the restaurant side. You have to have, and Roger's going to get this, an innovative processor to be able to make this work. And clearly you have found one that has innovation that matches their name.
Yes. Innovative Foods in Evans. I've been with them for at least 15 years. They started with them, and I've known that family for several years. I knew the owner before. He was a few years ahead of me in college, and we just had a long-term relationship. And so it really worked good. And having a good, solid foundation with your processor to do what you want to do. And they are very helpful in suggesting things to do.
Yeah.
So another challenge I was just going to say, you know, thinking through logistics, another challenge that I'm sure exists is just making sure you have that consistent supply of beef to your restaurants. Has that been a challenge for you, or are you able to supply, you know, beef year round, whereas a lot of guys, they might be processing fat steers once or twice a year?
That was probably the first hurdle I worked out, was making sure I had product available year round. So we calve in the spring and the fall. Majority of the cattle are our own. We also purchase some cattle. My nephew has a registered Angus herd, and he raises bulls. And so we try to also purchase some calves from those people that have bought our bulls, and so we know the known genetics. And that's a big key, having a consistent product time after time after time. So the steak you buy 6 months down the road tastes as good as the steak you bought today. And so that keeps your customer base coming and coming and purchasing all the time. So it's been a long, long process of building up that genetic base.
Roger, I'm sure I was focused on something else, and I just have 20 seconds. When did you say you started this?
Well, gosh, I've been at it 30 years.
30 years. You're a bit ahead of your time. You know that, right?
Yeah. We had started out with a website, and it was quite interesting the way I run that website.
We'll talk about that when we return. Phillips County, Colorado, coming to us live today. Roger Coburnstein will be back with more Rural Route after this. See, here's the deal. Every day I talk about certified Piedmontese and the opportunity that it presents for cattlemen in the Great Plains of America. It's not the only program. You can be a part of a program, just like Roger's walking us through today. But if you don't want to be the one who sells directly to the consumer, you want to get paid appropriately with the percentage of the consumer's food dollar, then check out what's happening at Certified Piedmontese. I can tell you it's worked well for us. Get details by going to the website, LoneCreekCattleCo.com, and the details you find there is who you need to get a hold of to find out more information. Welcome back. Rural Route, Trent Lewis alongside Amanda Radke. She now found a partner in justifying this fall calving project. So you two are like birds of a feather flocking together.
We're in lockstep, and it appears there's some benefit.
Actually, you can make the case that fall calving would be beneficial or financially wise for everybody, because we know that 80% of the calves in the country are born in the spring. It just gives you some opportunities. I mean, that's always been the case. You just have to be willing to make that work for your situation, being when the feedstuffs are readily available. But when you're selling, do you sell 100% of your cattle this way, Roger?
Those that don't go as breeding bulls or retained heifers that are retained within the herd,
excellent.
Well, you don't want to call them rejects, but you know, the ones that don't fit our standards to make the herd, why, yes, we feed those out.
And did you start to tell me before I had to go to a break that you were doing something a little unique with your website marketing early on?
Yeah. A few years back, when we was just doing the quarters, halves, and wholes, to connect with the consumer, we had a website I set up, and the consumer could put a, we required a little bit of a down payment, and we gave them a code, and that code was actually the animal's ear tag number. So they could go to our website and go to my meat page and actually type in that ear tag number, and it would bring up that animal, a picture of that animal. We try to do at least monthly to weigh them animals so they do the progress of their animal, and give them all the information about, so they could actually watch their animal grow. And then at the harvest time, we would say, okay, your animal is going to harvest on such and such date, and we put a link in there to the cut sheet, so they could actually go and visit with the processor and actually have a look at what a cut sheet is, kind of pick out what the kind of steaks they want, and roast and stuff like that. The only drawback was that the consumers started naming their animals, so you kind of had that issue to deal with. So, but otherwise, that was a great way to get the customer interested in your product.
There's probably nothing more educational for the new customer, because we sell a lot of pigs this way, the way you just described. I don't give them an ear tag and allow them to name them. I don't do that. That's pretty innovative right there. But just delivering the animal, because we, just to be clear, for the custom exempt, we sell the animal and then we deliver it to the plant for them, and they're asked for cutting instructions. And the majority of people that are coming into buying animals this way, whether it be a half a beef or a whole pig or a duck from Amanda, because she's now selling ducks, Roger, is how you actually process that. What questions you have to answer in order to be able to get it cut up in the roast? And are you going to pull the flat iron out of that clod? You know, all of these other things. That's a level of education that you can't even anticipate until you get to that point where people are like, I don't even know where to start. But it's tremendous to walk them through that.
Yes, yes, yes. And even with our other trades and stuff like that, you just walk everybody through it and try to explain where the cuts come from. And when you have a new cut, that the public's not aware of, and so then you sit down and you explain that cut. It's a real learning and fun experience for both me and the consumer.
Mm-hmm. You know, Roger, something I hear that you're very good at, and maybe you can provide some tips here, is relationship building and networking. And I mean, from your processor to your retailers to your customers to the producers you've partnered with, how do you get, I mean, if a guy is saying, you know, this isn't working for me, the cattle business is tough and I'm not paying the bills, selling them at the sale bar, and I need to do something different, where does the guy even start to begin making these relationships and getting things moving in the right?
Well, I get that question quite often, and I tell everybody to start slow. Start real slow. And there's room for all of us. And find somebody that is actually doing that and just pick their brain. And most people, and I've done that several times to people in other states, will call and say, hey, how do you go about doing this? How do you go about doing that? And I have no problem explaining that to them. So that would be my biggest benefit. But I can't emphasize enough starting slow. Don't get a bunch of animals lined up at your processor and then say, oh, I don't have them sold. Or get a bunch of animals sold and say, I don't have room for them at the processor. It's all kind of a little stepping stone, and you gotta do it slow and steady, and you'll retain customers. And it gives you a chance to work on your product, so that you're consistent with your product.
Consistency is the key. I mean, to keep people coming back, you keep your processor doing things consistent and maintaining quality is key. But the biggest hurdle, Roger, and all three of us can speak to this, because we do pigs. Quite frankly, because in a short 8 months, I can have a pig from bred, sow bred, to the pig marketed. When you're talking about doing something like this, you're going to have a heifer or a cow for a few months. You're going to breed her. 9 months later, you're going to get a calf. 22 months or so, roughly, somewhere in that time frame, you're going to be able to market that animal. You're talking about a lag time that's upwards of 30 months plus. From the start to finish of this process, that's a long lag time to get a paycheck back.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But once you get the ball rolling, it's a long process, especially with beef.
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't know. Go ahead, Amanda.
Oh, I was going to kind of change gears, but wondering, you know, one of the things my husband and I talk about is in the cattle business, when you make a mistake or you make a plan that doesn't pan out, it is expensive and it is a costly learning lesson. And I guess the goal is that you learn faster and make fewer of those costly mistakes. But what's been something that really tripped you up along the way that if there was a young person listening, you could help them bypass maybe some of that pain as you kind of grew this side of your operation?
Okay. Oh gosh, I got a long list of those. Taking care of your product. It took for, you know, since I do deliveries every week, finding the right kind of refrigeration equipment that's within your budget that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg. And then maintaining that product or maintaining that equipment. I learned more about refrigeration here in the last, since COVID, than I've ever thought I would know. And so, because you just couldn't get people to come work on your equipment, or they were busy working on somebody else's equipment, and it was of the essence, I got to get my refrigeration going, or it's not chilling like it should be. So, and I've got probably more equipment than most people. I've got two walk-ins and a display freezer and a display cooler. And so I'm checking temps twice a day on all those. So it's a challenge to keep that kind of thing going. You're also logistics of getting things, making sure, okay, we're going to cut so many head this week. Let's get them cut this way, that way, and making sure you communicate that with your processor and hoping that they have enough staff to get it all done.
I have to interrupt you, Roger. That is the biggest hope, that they have enough staff to get it done. We're back with more Roll Route after the second half. And today is my second and final day here in Bismarck with the Lignite Energy Council, the coal folks of North Dakota. There's so much information coming out about where we're at with energy production, what we need to be doing, and I look forward to digesting all of this, regurgitating it, and putting it into context where everybody can understand how important coal is. Life is powered by coal. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Amanda Radke. Roger Koberstein joining us from Holyoke. Do you have a retail outlet then? You mentioned the walk-in and the display. Do you sell retail in Holyoke?
I have a little deal out here at the farm. I don't sell retail per se, but sure, if somebody wants to come and visit me, I don't turn them away. But I also have one of the grocery stores that I deliver to is just a few miles away in Haxton, which is about 17 miles. And so they sell our beef exclusively. It's all the beef in their cooler is ours.
It's just awesome that Haxton still has a grocery store, because that metropolitan area, you know, you could have to go all the way to Holyoke to get groceries if you lived in Haxton.
Yeah. Haxton's not a big town. So
does it have 500 people?
It might be closer to 750,000, maybe.
Oh, I think you're over exaggerating. Let me look it up. 804, they say.
Okay. Too far off.
No, you're spot on. So you could sell everybody a ribeye in Haxton.
Yes.
I just want to... Go ahead, Roger.
Go ahead. Well, and I'm just going to say there have been some challenges this summer to that, to merchandise and stuff like that. We have noticed some changes in consumer preferences throughout the summer with all the grocery stores.
Tell me about that.
I always kind of try and guess what everybody's thinking, and I have to start being drunk, and so might be a little bit. But in the beginning of the summer, why we kept thinking, oh boy, we're gonna it's gonna be a rough summer. We kind of knew it was with all the economics and political things going on, and so, but it really hung in well. Throughout all the holidays and stuff like that, steaks were good, ground beef was good, all them different high dollar end cuts. You just about couldn't keep them on the shelf. But the steaks have slowed down. The high-end steaks have slowed down. And the hamburger has, the ground beef has picked up some. And the consumer is getting very, very wise with their spending dollar.
So you're talking about a direct impact of the economy is what you're saying?
Yes.
Hmm.
And so have you just had to ramp up your marketing efforts even more to kind of creatively show people how they can enjoy beef on a budget, or how have you kind of countered that?
Oh, yes. Kind of down? Yeah. Hey, that's business every week. And so on them specials, I will put a, we put a little sticker on there, and it's got a QR code on that sticker. So, like, if you're on a chuck roast, like, there'll be a little sticker on there with a QR code. It'll say, scan me for a recipe. And so the consumer with their smartphones can scan that QR code, and it actually brings up a recipe or a video of the recipe. And so we're trying to give the consumer some tips on how to prepare a meal. Another thing we did last year we made some meatloaf. Actually made the meatloaf and put it in a aluminum pan. So it was just like a take out of the freezer and throw in the oven and cook it, and away you go. And so doing things like that that are out of the box, that are innovative, can really boost consumer sales.
I just want to repeat, and at the end of the day, Roger, I'm going to have to send Dave Alicott an invoice because we're kind of turning into a stump speech for Innovative Foods, but I don't mind. I've been in his plant. I know what a phenomenal job that he does. But everything, I deal with 5 butcher shops on a monthly basis. And everything that you have walked us through is completely dependent upon that working relationship with the whoever is going to be doing your processing, because they're either assisting you or they're a hurdle for you. And what you have described is that every step you have a partner at the processing level that's facilitating to make this work. I can't shout that large enough.
Yeah. And got a phone call from them almost 3 years now one morning and said, you're sitting down. We had a fire. And their smokehouse caught fire, and so that smoke went to the cooler and so on and so forth, and I lost a couple weeks worth of production that were hanging in the cooler. And so, but they are, we worked through that situation. We, they done some innovative things. They actually found another plant that they could use that wasn't being used, that was practically brand new. And so we switched things that, to there, and we could get back to, their location. And so they care just as much about their customers as the customers, you know, like me, that and work with them.
Yeah, his only problem, Dave, I'm talking about Dave Alicott, is he's hung up that pig meat has to be from a Berkshire. I try to explain to him that spot meat is actually easier to come by, and it's more flavorful, more tender. It's just a better deal, Dave, but he's just not a good listener.
Well, actually, his boy, they have showed a couple spots and done very well with them at county fairs.
Yeah. Well,
this guy, you can't pin him into a corner, I don't think. He's a mark.
True story.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have to get a hold of Matt and see where he's stepping out on me, where he's getting these spot pigs that he didn't call me for. So that's what I'm going to do immediately when we're done.
But, and like I said, they felt bad about the fire, and
my background is we, Dave and I know each other, and I've been in Montford for some years, when it was Montford and was in doing quality control and research and development. And I'm Dave back in those days. And but they are, and that's one thing that we do with our, that they've been very instrumental in, is all of our, they pull samples every week on the cattle for, to do E. coli and steck test. And then every week, a sample of some bee that I have made is also tested. So then cattle are double tested. And so I know, when I leave the plant with my product that it's totally free. And, that's something that most plants aren't doing.
One other thing that we have to address, Roger, you brought it up, and, you know, it's pretty easy to sell this stuff. The distribution and transportation is where you got to have that figured out. And clearly you've got a system that's working for you. So do you have any advice on the delivery, shipping, and transportation to keep that affordable?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are shipping frozen product. And I would... shop around and find if you're going to ship it. My best luck has been the UPS. They have done a good job with me. Don't ship on a Monday. Ship on a Monday or Tuesday. Don't ship any other day of the week except a Monday and a Tuesday, because the chances of the product not making there by Wednesday or Thursday are, you got to have it. You got to time that. We used a deal, they call it like frozen, like kind of like a quilt and a frozen blanket, and it's got little pockets in it that you free to freeze, and you can wrap your meat in that or put it in that. Size your box with your product. Make sure your box is full of frozen product. It'll keep much better, ship much better. Let's see, if you're going to get into the delivering yourself, make sure you're, up to, you got the right equipment. I see a lot of trailers where, they've got a, refrigeration unit on the trailer, and then right there beside it, they've got a generator to run that refrigeration unit while they're going down the road. I had that experience. I had one of the units, first thing that happened, and they'll find out in the wintertime. You'll burn up your generator in the wintertime because if you're out delivering on a wet day, the calcium chloride that they spray on the road will eat up a generator quicker than anything.
Now you're just wishful thinking. You're thinking we're actually going to have moisture again in the Great Plains of America. We know that it will rain, and now we're going to take a break and come back for the last segment for Rural Route after this. And now we talk about immune health. We talk about health in general. The world's authority on nitric oxide production, Dr. Nathan Bryan, explains.
We've got about 14 COVID clinics around the U.S. where we have a nitric oxide drug trial going on. I'm exposed to COVID probably every day. You know, pre-COVID, we as humans are exposed to viruses and bacteria every day of our life. That's just the world we live in. Some people get sick, some people don't. Why do some people get sick and why do others not? It all boils down to their ability to generate nitric oxide and to have certain things replete in their body like vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C, selenium. If you're nutrient deficient, you're going to get sick. If you can't make nitric oxide, you're going to get sick. If you do all these things, you can be exposed to COVID or any other virus, and your immune system nips it in the bud, and you don't get sick from it. It's really that simple.
We're going to change this ordering process up to make it simpler. Go to loosetailsmedia.com. Loosetailsmedia.com. There will be an order mechanism there. And if you want more of the science, I'll get that to you from Dr. Nathan Bryan. Loosetailsmedia.com. It's N-O-2-U. The product's the same. The place you get it is different. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Amanda Radke. Roger Koberstein joining us from Phillips County. What a beautiful fairgrounds. That building, I've had the opportunity to speak probably five times in that building at the fairgrounds, Roger. That's a fantastic facility. Glad you contributed your tax dollars to pay for that.
Yes, we did, and I think it's just about paid for.
Awesome.
From what I've heard. What I've heard, so.
So, go ahead, Amanda.
Oh, I was going to say, going back to that restaurant, that sounds pretty awesome. I don't think you said the name of it, but I was curious the name, and then also what's their best-selling menu item that you would supply?
The ones that I deal with are called the Next Doors and the Sink. Sink is located in Boulder. The Next Doors are located in several places there in the Front Range. Mostly the Next Doors are burger joints. They're about, all of them are about burger joints now. They've kind of gone away from doing the steak and stuff like that they once were. They would rather do the burger type of deal. And I'll have to chop that one, another one up to innovating. But, one of the chefs at the Next Doors got a hold of, innovative and asked him where to get the best beef. And so Dave actually told him me. And so, but that group of restaurants is owned by, Kimball Musk, who is, Elon's brother. And Kimball has spent some time out here at the farm, and so we've kind of showed them how we do things and what we do, and so that working relationship has worked well.
Roger, I have to ask you about this because your primary business, the Front Range of Colorado, and you include Boulder. We know that there's basically a war on cows and the greater beef business. That has to precipitate some tremendous conversations and educational opportunities for you.
Oh, yeah. Especially at the one in Boulder, the Sink. I've got a deal there. We put a banner in the restaurant says, okay, this is where your burgers come from. And then I've also developed what we call a little restaurant card, and that's it's on their table, and it's kind of a thank you from us saying we appreciate you buying our product and stuff like and telling them about the animal, and we've got a nice picture on there of a pasture with a bunch of cows in it and stuff. And then we put the QR code on there that leads to our website. So while they're waiting on their burger, they can actually read about where their burger come from, how it was processed, and just more education to keep them aware of what we do and how we what our practices are and things like that. So they just. Just one more tool.
I can't imagine how many times a day you get asked, is this grass fed?
Oh, yeah. And we say, yeah, it's grass right up to the last 90 days. and actually, it's probably Nebraska grass fed. We've got the grass in Nebraska that we summer on.
Mm. Well, then we could talk all day and night. Well, maybe you don't own that pasture, but we could talk all day and night about property tax in Nebraska, but that's not the topic of the day.
Yes, we do, although, yes, we could talk about those.
The one area where Colorado shines over Nebraska. My goodness, how'd that happen? Would you kind of give us your perspective of the greatest day for the beef business in my lifetime in the state of Colorado, and that was the day that your infamous governor, on behalf of his husband, decided to have a meat out day, and the community of agriculture, really, not just the beef business, the community of agriculture rallied to make this the greatest experience I've been a part of. What's your perspective on that situation and what it means today?
Well, that was a great opportunity for us to connect with the consumers. We took that day, and actually, right after it was announced that he was going to do that, I got a hold of the grocery store owners, and I said, we're going to have a barbecue on this day at every store, and we're going to give away hamburgers. And so we set it all up. I got the hamburgers around. We actually, I did in Wiggins and Akron and Walden and Hackett and Holyoke and St. Francis, Kansas. And we served over 2,500 hamburgers that day, and I donated all those. And that was our contribution, and we got to have the state representative and our state senator Jerry Songbird. They all stopped by, and so I was actually at the Hatchin store cooking, and so I got to do a one-on-one conversation with both those gentlemen.
Is Richard Holtorf your state rep?
Yes. Pellin. Pellin was then.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yep.
That was just
that whole situation.
Go ahead, Amanda.
It just really impressed upon me that it really set the example of how we should respond to things like that. Because if people don't remember, that was when the PAWS Act had been introduced that would essentially make livestock producers a felon, and you couldn't harvest an animal until they reached a quarter of its life, and that they defined the full life of a beef animal as 20 years. And then on top of that, to have your governor coming out and saying, we're going to solve climate change by eliminating meat for one day and encouraging all Colorado citizens. I mean, we're often attacked in agriculture, but this was like a really, really targeted attack. And what I've seen speaking across the country is folks either get really mad and defensive, or they just blow it off and say, look at these dumb city flickers. But you guys didn't do either of that. You said, you know, we see what you're trying to do, and we're going to go direct to the consumers, and we're not just going to talk about what we do, but we're going to show them where our heart is, and that we're members of the community, and that, you know, we have this great tasting beef that we're really excited about, and we'd love to have a conversation. And I think if we made that effort to do more of that across the country on a regular basis, I just absolutely believe people would fall in love with who we are and what we stand for, and they just get really excited about our product. So it's just my hope that we can continue to build on that momentum, because, I mean, like I said, you guys set the standard of how you should respond to things. What kind of, I guess, that monologue, what kind of response did you get that day to the folks you were serving burgers to?
Oh, we had great response. The whole deal, they kept the free will donations and donated those to the local 4-H. Ours that we collected at Haxton, there was two individuals that had some health issues and stuff, so we donated those proceeds. But everybody was more than happy to do some free will donations. And I know in Logan County, the Sterling Livestock, they had a big sale and raised several thousands of dollars and for their cause and stuff there too. So it was a big day, a big day.
I was actually at Sterling that day, and the Santa Mosa family did a phenomenal job. They served about 2,700 people that day, and I think, if I remember correctly, Jason will correct me, but I think it was around 40,000 that was raised that day. But it just set the tone. I was in Brush for two events, and then I ended up at the state capitol that night. And it was just an exhilarating day, Roger.
Yes, yes, it was. It was just great. And just so many people showed up, and we're glad that we did what we did. Was very supportive, and it was just an awesome day.
Mm-hmm. You can say what you want about the motivation behind Governor Polis at the time. The truth of the matter is that it moved him from an automatic incumbent getting a second term as governor to there's a chance he's not going to win now, and all happened because of that day.
Honestly, we should probably send him a thank you. Sold a lot of beef that day, like a lot.
Trust me, he's been thanked on numerous occasions. Roger, we're in the last minute. I don't know that you've properly given your website and any other closing thoughts you have for us today.
Oh, my website is, if it's up and going, I have issues just like everybody else. It's ColoradoAngusBeef.com. And my thought is, anybody do this, why I'd be free to visit with them and set them, or not set them in the right direction, but tell them what to expect. Because there's good days and there are bad days.
Amanda, closing thought?
It just gives me excitement talking about ways that folks are getting innovative and finding ways to get closer to that consumer retail dollar. And Trent, I guess I'll echo what you said earlier where, everybody markets their commodity beef the same way, calve in the spring, take them to the sale barn in the fall, and then we gripe about the prices. And I think this year, more than ever, it's going to be really important that we have a marketing strategy that allows us to capture more dollars. And this is just one more tool in the belt that we can consider.
And Roger reminds me that it's been too many days since I've been in Holyoke. I think I need to make another trip. We've successfully journeyed down the road, connecting rural and urban America. All three of us remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route in Phillips County, Colorado.